Welcome to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Next month marks the 10th anniversary of the Iraq War, and coming up later this hour, we'll talk with veteran international correspondent Reese Ehrlich about why he thinks the U.S. lost the war. And Sioux Falls Argus Leader sports columnist Stu Whitney discusses the proposed elimination of wrestling from Olympic competition. And in just a few minutes, we'll discuss net metering for small renewable energy projects with Wallace Enga of Dakota Rural Action and PUC Chair Gary Hansen. And you're welcome to join the conversation. You can email us at midday@sdpb.org. I'm also on Twitter, CarlSDPB, or you can give us a call at 800-524-3604. But first, SDPB Radio State House reporter Victoria Wicks joins us from Pierre with today's legislative update. And this morning, Vicki, hearings on kids and cars.
Kids and cars. And there were kids in the hearing room. I thought they'd all be in school, but
no,
they were there. And the eighth graders, I think, from Brookings were on a field day, so they were in there. But they did not testify one after another, so it was not such a long hearing. Senator Craig Teason worked hard this morning. He's former law enforcement, and he was on a task force on teen driving safety, I'm sorry. And he introduced four bills to address South Dakota's bad reputation in the nation. Nationwide, 39% of children who die are killed in car accidents, but in South Dakota, it's 44%. And they looked at various reasons for that. And one is age, youth, and another is distraction. And so the proposal was to raise the age for driver's permits by a year. And that one failed, mostly because of rural areas. Rural kids need to be able to drive, you know, not just for farming reasons, but also to drive themselves to school functions. You know, the school, you know, I drove, I think, 17 miles to school when I was a kid. And parents driving them back and forth would be a big time consumer.
Very time consuming. Yes, yes.
Yeah. One commissioner talked about farm kids starting to drive when they're six or seven.
Yeah,
that got a reaction in the room, even among the agricultural people who maybe put them behind the wheel at 12. They did pass a bill banning the use of wireless communications for the kids between 14 and 18 with GPS as an exception. So, you know, the texting and the phone calls and all that, they can't do it. There were rumors in the Capitol that one of the commissioners said this, committee members said this, that the kids couldn't have a phone within X number of feet or had to have it in the back seat or the trunk or whatever, but that's not in there. The committee members say that they don't know how it's going to be enforced. How will a police officer know that somebody is doing it? But they voted it along to the House floor for debate.
And there was another bill, you said. Third bill?
Well, there were two more. The fourth one was to establish a driver's ed program, and they were still debating that at the time that I started, you know, preparing to talk to you. So they might still be up there talking about that one. The third one put a limit on the number of passengers a young driver can have, with an exception for driving to school events. And committee members thought that would really be impossible to enforce. How do you know whether the kid is on the way to a school event or whether they just have a whole load of kids in the car. Mm-hmm. And they also thought, committee members thought it invaded a parent's responsibilities. That's my car, and I get to say who can be in it, not this bill. So that one was killed.
Okay, and I guess finally you watched a couple of repurposed bills.
That's what I'm calling it. I don't know if this is common or not. I guess I hadn't seen it, but a couple of bills that have been killed, they just kind of brought the corpse back to life and put a different idea into it. And
new brain,
one is going off
like
to
Frankenstein bills.
New brain. I was thinking of the moose, you know, when you're out hunting moose and then a blizzard comes and you have to, you know, cut open the moose that you killed and crawl into it and save your life.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the dead moose bills from now on for me.
Okay.
One is going to the Appropriations Committee, and another one is filled with definitions of bail bonds.
Okay. Well, thanks, Vicki, and we'll talk with you again tomorrow.
Okay.
That's SDPB Radio State House reporter Victoria Wicks, and you can hear her State House updates on Dakota Midday through the 2013 legislative session, about a week and a half left. You can find more coverage online at sdpb.org. You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. One of the proposals that failed during this legislative session is one that would have established net metering for small renewable energy projects. The bill was written by members of the Family Ag and Conservation Group Dakota Rural Action, and the organization says net metering is still a viable policy. Supporters say net metering will promote renewable energy production in South Dakota, but opponents believe the policy will raise energy prices on customers who aren't generating their own power. Joining us now to discuss the issue is Public Utilities Commission Chair Gary Hansen. He joins us from Pier. Commissioner, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Carl. Good afternoon.
Also with us is Wallace Enga of Dakota Rural Action. He's an advocate for home-based power. He runs solar and wind power in his hunting cabin. He's getting ready to install some solar panels at his home. Mr. Enga, thanks for joining us as well.
Okay. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, to begin our conversation, we should define what is net metering. Mr. Enga, do you want to take that one?
Well, basically, it's a method where I heard a lot of examples when they had the hearings there of analogies of what it was. But to me, I would say it's a way you treat the utilities grid as almost like your battery system, so that when you are producing more solar energy than you can use, which is exactly what happens during that narrow peak window every day that the sun is shining, you export it to the grid. When the sun goes down, you're still using electricity, and what you do is take your electricity back from the grid. So it kind of comes, you put so many kilowatts in, and you get them back at the same rate back to you. I guess that would be how I would define it.
Commissioner Hansen, is that how you would define net metering?
Well, thank you, Carl, and thank you, Wallace. I would add a couple of things. One is that there are different types of metering. One is wholesale metering, and the other is retail metering. Retail metering is the net metering that Wallace was talking about. And in South Dakota, we already have what is called wholesale metering, which is where the utility pays the avoided cost, the cost that it avoids by purchasing the electricity. Probably an example would fit if, assume you own an egg business and you only sell eggs. You purchase eggs for $1 a dozen and deliver eggs for $2 a dozen. The avoided cost is $1. That's the cost that you avoid if someone else is selling you. The retail rate is $2. That's the cost at which you're selling your eggs. Under net metering, the government would require you to pay $2 to anyone who could give eggs to you when you stop to deliver the eggs to them. That's the retail net metering. The avoided cost is if you stopped at their place and delivered eggs, you could buy eggs at $1 instead of $2.
So your argument, Commissioner Hansen, as I understand it, is that this net metering under this proposal, that it would be retail, that this would raise the power rates and cost for everyone?
Yes. Intuitively, it just cannot work any other way. And when you look at it and look at the nuances, look at the challenges for a utility company, it simply means that the costs are going to increase to the utility company. The utility company turns around and charges those costs off to the rest of their customers. A utility company cannot pay more for a product and then reduce its prices.
Mr. Enga, what's your response to that? Will this raise prices for others, the customers that aren't producing their own energy?
Well, there have been pretty extensive studies done that in markets that are huge compared to what we'll ever see in South Dakota, including California. And from what they've been able to tell, it's been almost negligible. You're probably talking, you know, tenths of a cent of a kilowatt hour at the most. And I would also add, this is not an all bad deal for the utilities. Solar energy production is all generated during daylight, and that absolutely matches the utility's peak demand. My utility company right here in South Dakota, I'm right west of Sioux Falls, is Xcel Energy. I can have a time of delivery rate plan they give us South Dakota customers where they'll charge you only 2.2 cents during the off-peak, but then you pay over 16 cents on-peak, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. That's before the fees and taxes. That's an incredible ratio of almost 800% peak to off-time cost per kilowatt hour. Peak time energy like solar is really valuable to them.
Commissioner Hansen, do you see that a system could be set up like that that would pay back a different rate for power generated during peak use and than non?
Well, that's certainly possible, yes. However, there's other things that need to be considered. First of all, a California example, one needs to understand that the price of electricity in California is 60% higher than it is in South Dakota. So using comparisons in other states is often fraught with some additional challenges. The challenge with solar, as with wind is primarily generated during the evening, during the night. But solar, yes, it does provide electricity during the daytime, but not every day. And there needs to be sunshine in order to create that electricity. So the utility company is faced with a challenge that they have to continue having a spinning reserve. They have to fill that trough when electricity does not exist from the distributed generation, such as solar or wind or another type of generation facility. It is necessary for the utility company to continue having backup electricity, what we call baseload electricity. Without that baseload electricity, electricity travels at the speed of light. It's very, very perishable. And so if that company, or in this case, if an individual is not generating electricity, instantly that the electricity gap has to be filled by the utility company.
Wallace Inga, in the debate that has been going on over this legislation that ultimately failed, I'm wondering if through those discussions, if there were some objections to net metering that you and Dakota Rural Action see as, legitimate, that maybe that there's a good case?
Well, there were, I'll have to admit, definite problems in the way that bill was written. That I saw. I wasn't actively involved in writing that bill, and it was pretty well submitted by the time I was getting involved in this. I just did want to add a little more about utilities that are doing this net metering, including my own, Xcel here. Last year in 2012, Xcel provided their Minnesota net metering customers $7,300,000 in solar incentive programs. This was a one-time payment of $225 per installed watt. That's watt, not kilowatt. You know, even a modest 10-kilowatt system, that was a payment of $22,500. And that site could still take that federal residential energy 30% tax credit. You know, here in South Dakota, Xcel spent $0 on solar incentives for our service area. And like I said, Xcel, they had over 10,600 solar energy system on its service area by the end of 2011, ranked in fifth in the country. 2012 was a huge year for them. I'm sure they're over 15,000 now. So it's not something at least some of the utilities are going out of their way to avoid.
We have an email from a listener, Scott, in Meade County. He's a rancher, and he writes that he would like to use wind power to supplement his existing service. The problem is transferring that wind power for my use. Net metering would simplify that interface. Hundreds like me, Scott writes, would pay for the new meter if it could decrease my electric bill. And he says that the PUC should be spearheading this option instead of making excuses. And I'm wondering what your response is to that, Commissioner Hansen.
Thank you. Thank you, Carl. The Public Utilities Commission is a regulatory quasi-judicial authority. We're not a promotional entity. We're not a marketing agency. We are, well, like I say, we're quasi-judicial. We're regulators. It's our job to make certain that we protect the consumers and that we provide the opportunity for utility companies to exist, to make enough money so that they can attract capital, so that they can invest in their products, so that the citizens receive a reliable, cost-effective, affordable product, a safe product. That is the balance and responsibility that we have. So even though I'm a strong supporter of renewables, I think it's extremely important that we move as responsibly as we can to renewables. We have to recognize that fossil fuels are finite. Once they're burned, they're gone forever, and that there are emissions from them, that there's problems from mercury, that there's a lot of challenges here. But we have to do it in a responsible fashion. And through net metering, what we're doing is increasing the cost to all of the consumers that do not have a generation system. The person who this is a very, very fair deal it's a subsidy basically to the party that builds a generation facility, but it makes everyone else pay for their generation facility. And that's just not fair. If the state wants to somehow, such as Wallace was pointing out in Minnesota, if the state wants to incentivize this and have everyone across the board pay into a general fund or whatever, or have a higher grocery receipts tax or whatever, that's a policy decision that the state would need to make. It's not one that the PUC makes. We are from that. I'll back off from the additional explanation that I was going to give, but just to point out that incentives have to be paid for. Somehow that money that is received, the millions of dollars that are paid to these companies, it has to come from someplace. And in Minnesota, when I took office, the cost of electricity was less in Minnesota than it was in South Dakota. Today it is higher, and it's been higher for some years now. They had $10.4 million of curtailed generation which is electricity that they couldn't sell, but had to be paid for, that there was no benefit from because of their policies. And I don't want to see that mistake made in South Dakota, because it costs everybody money.
Is there a middle ground in this discussion, Wallace Enge, that you can see?
Well, I would like to make one correction that the commissioner said there. That was let me find the number there again, $7,300,000, I think it was. I can't see it right now. That was not provided by the state of Minnesota. That was my utility, XL Energy, that provided that program. It was $7,300,000 incentive, $225 an installed watt. And by the way, Minnesota also does do some additional subsidizing for solar events. Places. I don't know why it works in just about every other state in the country, but it'll never work in South Dakota. I mean, it's getting down. I think there's only three other states or so that don't have formal mandated policy in place, and one of them is Tennessee. And they've got a situation that we could only dream about. The TVA there has a Generation Partners program where they pay a premium of 12 cents on top of the retail rate for every kilowatt hour of electricity you produce. So you get your retail rate and you get 12 cents on top. If that's not having net metering, boy, bring it on.
We're just about out of time here in this discussion, but I want to just bring up another comment from a listener. this email, he writes that the small amount of incentive gain for a few small users is not a detriment to others. And he asks Commissioner Hansen, how about a compromise?
Well, thank you. It's really not our position to compromise. This is a policy issue. I am in a restricted position as a regulator to follow the law and to protect the consumer. And yes, I would think it'd be a wonderful idea for people to sit down and have a discussion between the utilities and folks who wish to promote this type of a facility. But we have to remember that when there's a $7.3 million incentive, call it an incentive, subsidy, whichever, it has to come from someplace. If it comes from Xcel has to be charging that off some way. They don't print money like the federal government. It comes from somewhere. And Tennessee has a completely different situation because they have a tremendous amount of very, very cheap hydroelectricity. So we have to examine it from a standpoint of not all of the states are the same. There's 36 states that have higher costs of electricity than the state of South Dakota. And that's one of our jobs, is to keep people informed of what the challenges are. And if policymakers want to change that, then that's up to them.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. Certainly talk about this plenty more. Commissioner Hansen, thanks so much for taking the time to join us on Dakota Midday.
Thank you. And thank you, Wallace, for giving such a good explanation of the challenges you face.
And, Mr. Enga, thanks for your time as well.
You're welcome.
Gary Hansen is chair of the South Dakota Public Utilities Commission, and Wallace Enga is a member of Dakota Rural Action and an advocate for home-based power.